Welcome to the October 25th City Council meeting. We will have, and I know you're going to do roll call, but Mr. Polch will not be here. Mr. Koch is zooming in, and because the governor has declared another exemption or whatever he's doing to the emergency declarations, Mr. Koch is allowed to zoom in, so we're doing it by the rules. We will go with the Pledge of Allegiance now. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent, thank you. Now, we will go with the official roll call.
Koch.
Yes.
Transier.
Here.
Plocher is absent. Soling.
Here.
Funkhauser.
Here.
Merrick.
Here.
Tarulis.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Very nice. I have no amendments to the agenda. We do have a presentation tonight. We're going to do the FYE, that's fiscal year ending, is that correct? What the E stands for, Rob, wherever you are?
Correct.
Hey, look at that. Audit presentation. And how's this going to work? Who's going to start?
Jamie.
Jamie's going to start. Oh, you actually are coming in live today. Oh, or tonight. You were on the phone earlier.
I think so.
Yeah. So do me a favor, just state your name and who you're with for the record.
Sure. Jamie Wilkie, I'm one of the partners with Lauterbach and Eden, the city's auditing firm.
And was it a rainy drive-in for you?
It was a rainy drive, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us. So I want to start this evening publicly reviewing the city's April 30th, 2022 annual audit. You all probably have some rather thick documents in your possession. So certainly I'll provide some oversight this evening and point out some of the key sections within the audit document. I will be followed by Rob, who will be giving some of the financial result highlights. So my focus this evening will really be on the audit process itself, as well as the results of our audit testing. So current state statute does require that the city undertake an independent audit within 6 months of the close of the fiscal year. Each year when we come in to provide audit services, we really have two primary goals. Number one, we are looking to ensure that the city's financial statements are in fact presented materially correct. We are also taking a look at the overall internal control environment of the city. So we are taking a look each year at policies, procedures. We undertake internal control testing, basically to have reliance on the systems that are here in place to ensure that the financial statements that we are opining upon are in fact materially correct. So that's really the overview of why we are engaged by the city each year. I certainly want to start off our discussion this evening with a huge thank you to the city staff. They really do an excellent job preparing for the audit. In particular, Rob and his team are always well prepared when we come in. We do work with about 100 municipalities in the Chicagoland area. For us to be able to come in and have no material adjusting journal entries that are detected is certainly outstanding and a true testament to the effort that's put in by staff to prepare for the audit. So I certainly want to thank Rob and his team, and certainly under the City Council direction of just the level that is put into the audit process itself. So thank you very much. Also, this evening, I'm happy to report we had no new recommendations related to the audit. So nothing new that we're putting out there as far as best practices, areas of concern, any testing that we found to be not in compliance with what we would expect to see. So truly a clean audit process. I will focus on the larger document. Any of you that have it in front of you this evening, it's the one with the logo on the front. There is about 210 pages provided in that document. So certainly I want to point out a couple of key sections within the report. First of all, on page 9 of that document, you'll find a copy of the city's Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. This is an award for last year's audit. It is another independent third-party review of the annual audit and really deemed the highest level financial reporting that any local government can undertake each year. So there is about an inch and a half thick checklist that we work through with city staff to ensure that the audit meets those stringent criteria. And we're happy to report that the city received that award for last year's audit. We will be, again, submitting this year's audit to the program, obviously anticipating receipt of that award again. The independent auditor's opinion, if you're interested, are on pages 11 through 13 of the document. As I indicated, we had a clean audit process. We have issued what we call an unmodified or clean audit opinion. That is the highest level opinion that the city can obtain each year. The very next section after the independent auditor's opinion is what we call management's discussion and analysis. This is probably the most important section within the document from any council member's perspective. It really serves as the executive summary to the report. So I did want to point out that that can be found on pages 15 through 27 of the document. So as you have time to review that section in detail, I would certainly encourage you to do so. There's also a wealth of information provided at the back of the audit document. Any of you that might be interested in 10-year trend information for the city, and I know Rob will highlight a few key statistical pages. You can find that in the staff section of the document starting on page 174 and taking you all the way through the last page of the report. Certainly happy to open it up to any questions that you all might have about the audit process or the results of the audit. Otherwise, I'm going to turn things over to Rob so he can highlight some of the financial results this evening.
Questions for Jamie? I do have one if no one else does.
Of course.
And you may have mentioned this, but from our conversation earlier today, I've got a note. And I'm not going to be able to put this in auditor terms, but there were no material journal entries.
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about that and how rare that is, because Rob, where are you at? You moved?
I moved, yeah.
Yeah, you moved. Rob and his staff have done a fantastic job, and this is so cool to hear this.
They really do. So for communities of this size, I will tell you, we typically come in and do detect adjusting journal entries. Sometimes there's non-routine transactions that have to be posted as part of the year-end close process. For many of the communities that we work with, the auditors are pretty heavily involved in that, meaning we're kind of finding or detecting some of those adjusting journal entries. To be able to come into a community of this size and have no material adjustments, it's fantastic and certainly puts the city staff at the very highest level of our group of municipal clients. So not the norm.
So Rob and his staff, and Bart, you hired Rob years ago, didn't you?
Did.
Yeah, so, so good job and awesome job. So thank you, because it's exciting to hear stuff like that. It really
is. I laugh. Most of our clients that we come in, they're ex-auditors, and outside of that, it's hard to find a community that can fully adjust the books to that level.
That's awesome. And then Rob now is going to report on not only did they do fantastic record keeping, we had a very sound year financially. And we did a lot of capital improvements, too. So, Rob, take it away.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks for driving out here for that five-minute discussion.
That's okay.
Good evening. This is the audit overview for the fiscal year ended 2022. Maybe if I get the clicker.
Maybe we didn't spend enough last year, huh?
Maybe. So as Jamie mentioned, we did receive the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting from the GSA for our 2021 audit statements, and we'll be submitting again this year. Hopefully we'll make it for them. So there's a history of the general fund, almost going back about 20 years. It's kind of hard to believe, but it's the current year in 16 preceding fiscal years, so we actually go back to fiscal year 2006, before the Great Recession. At that time, you can see that fund balance was right about $6 million, although about half of it was comprised of bond proceeds. And as you move on into fiscal year 17, you can see fund balance starting to decline as they spent those bond proceeds down. We had some looming bad debts in FY09, and then in FY10 we wrote that bad debt off. By the way, there's some developer obligations at the time, and we actually went negative by about $500,000 in the general fund. After we made some budgetary cuts and the economy gradually improved, you see fund balance start to increase again. We had quite a big increase in FY13 of about $4.2 million, and that was the first year that the non-local sales tax went into effect. I made a little bit of a dip in fiscal year 14, but ever since fiscal year 15, the general fund balance has continued to increase. Right now, we're at about 50%. So if you take fund balance divided by total expenditures and transfers out of the general fund, you get about 50%. And if you throw in the TIFs, which is kind of that gray tip part of the line graph there, it's about negative 2.8. But even then, we're at 36%, which is still 1% above our policy threshold of 35%. So here you see the general fund budget surpluses and deficits. Again, back in 06, you had a large surplus due to bond proceeds. You can see in 07 through 10, they were bond proceeds were spent down. As I mentioned before, we were in a recession by 09 and 10. We had some bad debt in FY10. But then you can see the general fund start to increase. FY13 had a pretty sharp increase. Again, a little bit of a dip in FY14. That was the fiscal year that we closed out the old municipal building fund and the old rec center fund. But really, since fiscal year 15, the general fund's increased on average about $845,000, or about 14 cents a year, or 14% rather, by year. Obviously, that's skewed a little bit by the most recent two fiscal years. We had a surplus of $1.66 million last year, and we had a surplus this year of $1.45 million. So here are the major revenue streams of the general fund. Obviously, the big story this year is sales tax, which is comprised of our municipal and non-local sales. Last year, we had phenomenal growth. They increased by 12.5%. This year, that actually doubled to 25.1% year-over-year increase, which is pretty unprecedented. So we had total sales tax proceeds of over $7.9 million, and that accounted for about 34% of total general fund revenues. So why is such a substantial increase? Well, there's a couple of reasons. Part of it was aggressive fiscal and monetary policies stemming from the pandemic by the federal government. They did put a lot of money in the economy, and it did what they intended to do. It did stimulate consumer demand. Supply chain issues as well further drove up demand. There were some sourcing changes that went into effect last year regarding internet sales and sales tax, as we talked about it last year. And then, of course, the resiliency of the local economy all played a part in the superior sales tax performance that we experienced over FY22. Other taxes as well did very well. Utility tax, $216,000 over budgeted amounts, which is indicative of just all the new housing starts we've had over the last couple of years, so that revenue stream has continued to increase. And the income tax as well did very well, an increase of 28.5% over fiscal year 2021 amounts. Again, a lot of that stemmed from the same types of demand issues that impacted sales tax in such a positive manner. And also, too, the 2020 census, our population did increase, so our per capita share of income tax increased as well, as our population went from 19,022 to 21,533. And then some of the small revenue streams, too, that were more impacted by COVID, for instance, hotel tax. Last year, we did 66,000. This year, it rebounded actually to exceed its pre-COVID high, about 140. And then video game tax, last year was only about $125,000, and that more than doubled to be just over $250,000 for fiscal year 22 as well. So small revenue streams have returned to more of a normal pre-COVID level. So looking on the other side of the ledger, here we have expenditures, departmental expenditures. As you see, most departments did come in under budget. The Community Development Department was over budget by about $164,000 due to increased costs related to outsourced inspections, as well as some enhanced vehicle and equipment charge back. But it should be noted that those costs were easily covered by the additional building permit revenues that were generated, as those revenues exceeded budgetary amounts by over $300,000. And then, of course, admin services was slightly over budget as well by about $43,000, and that was caused by sales tax and business district tax rebates, which is just the direct result of those revenue streams coming in much better than expected. So we paid a higher revenue amount. So here we have a snapshot of the general fund. obviously what's glaring here is how much higher revenues are compared to what was budgeted, over $5 million. Taxes, as I mentioned, make about 2.2 of that positive variance, along with intergovernmental revenues as well, income tax, which I mentioned, along with our first allotment of ARPA proceeds, which totaled $1.4 million in the current fiscal year. Expenditures tracked, they were below budget by about $200,000. Net transfers actually exceeded budgetary amounts by $3.8 million as a result of us having such high revenue numbers. Council made the decision as part of the FY23 budget process to take some additional proceeds and put them into our capital accounts to fund future and current building and roadway capital outlays. So as I mentioned earlier, we did finish the year with a $1.45 billion surplus, which is $1.45 million better than we initially anticipated. We had a breaking budget initially planned for FY22. So getting into some items of note, if you dig a little deeper in the audited financials, you see fund balance categories and amounts starting on page 77. Nothing too incredible to report here. Obviously, we have some restricted fund balance amounts, fund balance for library, can be used for library, M&T, can be used for M&T, et cetera. We have some assigned fund balance that we assign as part of the budget process and the capital funds, particularly building grounds and citywide capital, because those fund balance amounts can only be used for capital purposes. And then we have an assigned fund balance, which is pretty much housed in the general fund, with about $10.5 million, which can be used for any operational purpose. And then we also, in the notes, you have pensions, which consist of IMRF and the police pension, as well as our OPEB, which stands for other post-employment benefits. And the city has an implicit OPEB because by state statute, we're required to have retirees on our health insurance program. So here we have IMRF, or the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. They've done a great job over the last couple of years with their investment return. They're on a calendar year, so as of December 21, I believe their investment return was 16.6%, which is almost double their benchmark of 7.5%. And as you can see, our percent funded has increased substantially over the last several years, and we're actually at 111% of funding at the end of the current fiscal year. What that means for us, and we're already starting to see this, is our employee rate, the amount that the city contributes to IMRF is starting to decline. In fiscal year 2021, that rate was 11.11%. In the current calendar year 2022, that amount dropped by 20%, so right now we're at 8.9%. And then for calendar year 2023, it's expected that amount will drop again by another 26% to 6.56%. So that'll save us right around $100,000 in IMRF contribution based on the current amount of covered payroll. Here we have the police pension fund. Well, last year they had a phenomenal rate of return as the equity markets really took off. Last year they had about 27% return. This year, the equity markets really weren't quite as hot, obviously, especially in the spring months. So they actually had a negative return of 4.8%. Although, the percent funded, I didn't drop too much. It was at 58% last year. Right now it's tracking at about 54%. I did mention in the tax levy memo that this will actually be the last fiscal year that investment decisions for the police pension fund will be locally controlled. Right now we're in the process of transferring all the pension fund asset up to the school fund, which is run by this organization from the state called Illinois Police Officers Pension Investment Fund, commonly referred to as IPOP-IF. So we're sending the money up to IPOP-IF, and hopefully the plan is that this pooled asset account will act like IMRF and start generating some superior returns. So that's the plan. We'll see what happens. Other item of note, I just wanted to briefly touch on our long-term debt. We have rapid amortization of our long-term debt. It's a fancy way of saying we're almost done paying that. We currently have 13 bonds outstanding, and 8 of those bonds, or 60%, are going to be paid in full within the next 5 fiscal years. And actually, we have 3 bond issues that will be paid in full at the end of this current fiscal year 2023. Other items of note, as we move into the final part of the audited financials, the statistical section, starts on page 172. We have some historical trends covering the city's financial history, revenue and debt capacity, demographic and economic information, various operating information as well. I just wanted to touch on our full-time employee count. Currently, we have 87 full-time employees, or at least we did at the end of April 30th, 2022, which is in line with kind of where we were in 2010, right before we started to feel the impact of the Great Recession, and down about 9 from where we were at the peak of employment with 96 full-time people in fiscal year 2008. Additionally, there's other statistics. We have some operating indicators, traffic violations, permits, street inventory, resurfacing, and then we have some new housing starts as well. So moving on to the management letter. As Jamie mentioned, we have had new comments this year, which is certainly a good thing. We do have a recurring comment, which is pertaining to the deficit equity or negative fund balance in the countryside and the two downtown TIFs. Over time, we remain optimistic that those TIFs will yield sufficient surpluses and that eliminate that negative equity position or at least mitigate. And also, too, there's just mention of a new GASB pronouncement that we get to implement in the upcoming fiscal year. Very exciting about pieces. So we'll be working with the auditors to make sure that that gets implemented correctly for the fiscal year ending 2023. So upcoming, we've already begun our tax levy discussion. The council approved the estimate at the October 11th meeting. We have a public hearing set for the 8th, and then discussion potential vote on either the 22nd of November or December 13th. After that, we have the fiscal year 2024 budget rollout. Right now, we're kind of in the beginning stages, but as we move into November and onward through the end of the year and into January, we'll start having meetings with the various departments, laying things out, finalize the budget, and present it to City Council in February. We plan on having the public hearing on the 14th of March, and then gives us 3 meetings after that to discuss and finalize the fiscal year 24. So that's that wraps up the audit presentation. Happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Questions, comments? Mr. Peterson,
this might be more geared toward Barb, but thanks, Rob. You always do a great job.
Thank you.
But we had 87 full-time employees in 2022, 86 in 2010. We've grown exponentially since then. And based on where our budget is now, how many more full-time staff do you think that we need to be running more efficient?
Cool. That is good and very...
Not that we're not, not yeah. Implying we're not running efficiently now, but
a complex question. I mean, we are...
I counted yesterday, I came up with 75 new employees.
How?
75.
That's one metric for sure. It's something we look at all the time. There isn't a set time per year that we say, you know, let's produce this report and figure it out, because things are constantly changing. We saw it in community involvement, Rob touched on it. I think we talked about it mid-year, it might even have been a month after the fiscal year started. You know, our outsourced inspections went through the roof because more people were pulling building permits, we didn't have the staff in-house, we were collecting the revenue to offset that. But, you know, there's an opportunity there where we can say, no, basically when we observe some data, we're going to then make the recommendation to add people. So the police department is probably the only department within the city right now where they kind of have a ramp of scheduled hires based on population growth. So we try to, you know, maintain a relatively reasonable standard of somewhere between 1.5 and 2 officers per 1,000 residents. So we can kind of plan that out. And everyone else, it's, you know, a little bit of a management discussion, you know, when new things pop up. So, you know, the 96 is a good number. What that doesn't show on both sides of it is that in 2008, I was an assistant at the time and was intimately involved in the conversations. We had scheduled to hire 15 new employees in one fiscal year to be able to, at that point, handle what we thought was going to be exponential growth for decades to come. Obviously, that went the other way. And so some of those hires were hired recently out of the 96, but there were another 10 that we had hired within that 15 that didn't ever get hired. So we actually had authorized like 106 employees at one point or another. So since then, we've been obviously a lot more conservative with our new hires, trying to make sure that we're automating things, outsourcing things when appropriate, and really focused more on capital, vehicle, and infrastructure purchases rather than hiring new people. But, you know, the conversation is always there. You know, is there a chance maybe to be able to continue to grow and provide services, but use things other than just hiring new people. So,
well, with the new building, we'll play more room to that too.
For sure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. Anything else on that, Jason?
That's all I have.
Well, I'd like to follow up on that because that was actually a point that I wanted to make, is that increase one employee. The population in 2010 was about 17,000. Now it's probably 23, 24. It's between 35 and 40% higher, which would equate to 30 to 35 new employees. So, yeah, the staff has done a tremendous job. And Bart's point is, you know, also valid that some things are done more efficiently now. But staff's done a fantastic job. And I appreciate you noticing that, because that's one of the notes I was writing down. So thank you. Others? Questions, comments?
All right, thank you.
Bob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll give you a sucker. Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
See you next year. Oh, Ken, I'm sorry. Did you have any questions? Thumbs up. These Buckeyes are looking good. They're looking good, Ken. Okay, now we have a public hearing. And this public hearing is the ordinance approving the third amendment to the annexation and plan unit development agreement for a portion of the Windmill Farms Development Restored Church. So I'm opening the public hearing. That's all we're doing, is another public hearing. Okay. Is there anyone who'd like to speak to this public hearing? Nothing else, just this public hearing. Okay. I will close the public hearing. Is that all we're doing with that for the night?
Yes.
And then, Christy, when do we actually vote on this?
I should be coming back to you in November.
Okay, end of November. Right before Thanksgiving.
Hopefully before
Thanksgiving. Yeah. Well, that would be something to be thankful for, right? Good to see you again. Thanks for coming by. Okay. Now we move on to citizen comments on items on the agenda again. Just remind everyone, this is for items that are on the agenda. Does anyone wish to speak to anything on this agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. We're not going to have a motion yet, because I want to talk about a couple things without pulling them off. And I know Mr. Funkhauser will really point out I'm breaking the rules if we talk about it afterwards. So item six, I want to talk about the single axle dump truck price increase. This is the third increase. We ordered this, what, a year and a half ago, and we're still a year out?
Yes, that is correct.
And it started at, what, just under 100 grand?
For the chassis,
yes. Yeah, and I know this is not popular, but everybody's seeing this, and everyone's seeing a couple years for vehicles, so I just want to point it out. Next thing is we have sale of vehicles and equipment. That's not the one I want to talk about. We have another one we're talking about later. Well, I guess that's all I want to talk about on the consent agenda. Now, Mr. Funkhouse, you want to make a motion to approve as presented? Is there a second by Peterson? No discussion is allowed per Robert's rules, I guess. Roll call, please.
Koch.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Terulis.
Aye.
Transier.
Yes.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Next, we're on the mayor's report. We got several things here. First thing, though, is many times I have stuff not listed. And after our last meeting where we had a World Religion 101 presentation, very interesting, and I've had a chance to speak to some businesses in town, I learned about another religion or another festival. So yesterday was a festival called Diwali, and I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, but it's celebrated mostly in India, the subcontinent India, so Indians we're talking about, but the Hindus, the Sikhs, and the Jains, many of them celebrate this. And it's typically a five-day festival, but the peak day is celebrated in countries outside India, and that was yesterday. So I went to some of our local Indian-owned businesses, and I wished them a happy holiday, and they were even working on their holiday. And it celebrates light winning over darkness. And it's usually celebrated the first day of the new moon in the fall. So in the southern hemisphere, it's celebrated, which is our spring. So just wanted to give a little, contribute to our world religions. Next, we have the adoption proclamation. Mr. Peterson, do you want to read this one or do you want me to? We have it right here. This is something very dear to Mr. Peterson's heart, and he brought it forward. And...
Well, thank you. Some of you guys know, maybe not, my wife and I adopted two children, one from Russia, one from China, and I wanted to do this ahead of next month. Next month is National Adoption Awareness Month, so I wanted to do that today or tonight. So, whereas we have a responsibility as individuals, neighbors, community members, and citizens of the United City of Yorkville to recognize that all children need love, support, security, and a place to call home. And whereas for children who are born into families unable to meet their ongoing needs, adoption offers healthy and safe family environments, which help produce competent and successful adults. And whereas families who choose a life-changing path of adoption make meaningful and lasting difference in the lives of some of the most vulnerable young people in our society. And whereas adoptive parents and families require and deserve community and public agency respect and support. And whereas during National Adoption Month, we celebrate all those who have invited a child into their hearts and into their homes and express our profound appreciation for all who help make adoptions possible. Whereas volunteers in the United City of Yorkville help to ensure that children in foster care or other out-of-home placements are adopted into safe, loving homes, we call them forever homes, when their own families can't meet their needs, and now, therefore, I'm going to pass this along to Mr. Purcell.
Oh, you can say your name. I, John Purcell, do hereby proclaim November 2022, we're doing the whole month, as National Adoption Month in the United States of Yorkville, and I urge all citizens to support adoption organizations and engage in activities that strengthen families and communities to provide the optimal environment for children to learn, grow, and thrive so that all children have the benefit of happy, healthy, and safe homes.
Yes.
Thank you. Can I add real quick too, there are some local charities and local community service companies around here. For example, we are called to care. My wife's involved in that. I'm heavily involved in that. It's a phenomenally successful, it's a foster care. I'm not doing any justice. Go to the website. But it's very successful, and it helps about seven different counties in the area with families who are adopting or fostering. So if you're a foster parent and you get a call in the middle of the night, hey, we have a child for you, they have already gift baskets and packages ready to get delivered to your home. They have meals set up to get delivered to their home. So that if you get a baby in the middle of the night and you were thinking maybe you're going to be fostering a seven-year-old, those packages might have everything that you would need for a baby. So it is wildly successful. And it's something that's needed, so there's lots of volunteer work that can be done there. CASA here in Yorkville as well, another similar organization. They do need volunteers, so if anybody wants to volunteer, there's two great organizations right here without even leaving. So thank you, appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. It's fantastic what you and your family do. It is awesome. Yeah, you do fundraiser every year and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's a good time, too. Excellent, thank you. Okay, next... We have an appointment of the deputy clerk. And I know I asked you earlier how to pronounce your name. Monica Zizija?
Sure.
Close. Yeah. I didn't ask her today how to pronounce it. Anyway, I'm looking for a motion. Second to appoint her, please.
So moved.
Second.
Merrick, Terulis, discussion roll call, please.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch? Motion carries.
Very nice. And next, I'm looking for an appointment of a FOIA officer for Monica Sazizia. There we go. Mr. Thank you, Funkhauser. Soling, discussion, roll call, please.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Excellent. Okay, this is the next thing. And we'll get this motion going, and I'm going to actually have Tim talk about this just briefly. Is there a motion and a second to approve the disposal of park and rec vehicles?
Second.
I think I heard Transier and Peterson. Tim, do you want to talk about this just briefly?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. I mean, this is part of the purchasing process that we started last November, where the council approved the Parks and Recreation Department purchasing for the park trucks. We've actually received three of them now. We're expecting the fourth one in the next 60 days. And as stated in the memo last year, part of that was also to get some of our youth vehicles to sell those in, so we can purchase other things with that, with those funds. So we received a really good offer from the crew before, as stated in the memo. We'd like to get these four vehicles off the property and not maintain any functions and stuff.
Questions?
How many price increases did you have on yours?
The trucks inherit the same thing. The trucks that we got, those didn't really go through that. Pickup trucks, but those which you're seeing in a lot of cities are those huge, big trucks. That seems to be the issue. The pickup trucks that we didn't have any price increases, which we were expecting, but they didn't happen.
Good.
So, and to the point, we've actually had more pickup trucks this year than we did last year by one. And we're going to.
Snowplows.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Thank you. So, and we're going to park one in Funkhauser's neighborhood. That's right, parking his driveway. We're going to block him in. It's going to break down. Okay, any other questions or comments on that? Roll call, please.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Koch.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Tarulis.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Excellent. Now we have another awesome thing going on here. On November 4th, we have the Saluting with Smoke, or Mission 0100 Saluting with Smoke event. I'm going to read this, and then I think I see Sean and anyone else who wants to come forward. If you want to talk about your event, let me read it first. This is really exciting. It's going to be a raging waves. It's just a super cool thing, but he can tell you all about it. Whereas Mission 0100 Hours is a nonprofit focused on veteran suicide prevention and awareness through competitive culinary arts, and whereas MZHH believes competition barbecue can provide a familiar, structured, and mission-centric environment to veterans that helps struggling vets channel their energies towards healthy goals, whereas veterans have the opportunity to cook with teams as part of their effort and mission to raise awareness and end veteran suicide by embedding veterans with barbecue cook teams for an immersive barbecue mission, and whereas Friday, November 4th, 2022, and Saturday, November 5th, 2022, marks Mission 0100 Hours Saluting with Smoke Festival and fundraiser event at Raging Waves Water Park, 4000 North Bridge Street in Yorkville. Now, therefore, I, John Purcell, Mayor of the United City of Yorkville, do hereby proclaim the weekend of November 4th, 2022 as the Saluting with Smoke Weekend, and the United City of Yorkville encourage all residents to support Mission 0100 Hours by participating in the Saluting with Smoke Festival and fundraiser. So, that is awesome. You want to come forward? Any of you come forward and talk about it? All I ask is just state your name for the record. But that's awesome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Officer Mayor. Appreciate it.
You can
congrats. Oh, yeah, you can have this too. Here, this is for you.
Sean Young, the President's founder of Mission 0100 Hours. So Mission is 0100 hours. In military time, 0100 hours is the start of an event. It's 0000. As an Army combat veteran myself, I saw lots of 0100 hours. So in our name, we strive to provide veterans the start of an event. I use competitive culinary arts as my therapy for my PTSD for my deployment. Started cooking competitive barbecue many, many years ago. I cooked 116 professional barbecue contests, and we started this in 2019 to take my experience and provide that experience to veterans. So we, on November 4th and 5th, we have our event Saluting with Smoke. It is a fundraiser festival. We have barbecue teams coming from seven states. If you've ever seen Pitmasters or Barbecue USA or Chopped, a lot of them will be here. These are pro teams, backyard teams, and we provide them a veteran through our program. We have vets coming from I think 11 states all over that come over 2 days and begin to heal from some of the combat issues and struggles that you have with military deployment. So, love to have you out. It's free admission, open to the public. Tim, I dropped off some flyers over there.
If
you'd like to head on out, but come out and support a completely free event. We have food vendors, live bands Friday and Saturday, all sorts of food on the place, a mobile brick-fired pizzeria, barbecue, kids and activities, festival environment, and every lots of veterans. There's hundreds and hundreds of veterans there, so thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming, Sean. That's awesome. Hey, does the press want to help promote this and get a picture?
Absolutely.
Come here, Sean, let's get a picture. We got to get some free promotion out of this.
What's that? I'm going to wear my breakfast.
I just had it in the background.
Okay, that is awesome. That's all I have on my first marriage report, but wait, there's more. Who said that? Was that Columbo? Okay, now we're on to Public Works. I'm turning this over to Mr. Merrick.
All right, thank you, breather.
I got some tea I've been drinking, but it's almost gone.
DOT 2022-69, 40 Mile Roads Interceptor Sewer Bid Award. A motion to accept the bid and award contract of Fisher Activity Incorporated in an amount not to exceed $3,140,637.45, subject to the conveyance of easements required to construct the sewer line.
Second.
Mr. Tarulis. Okay. Any discussion? Eric, Brad, Bart, anything you want to add?
We do anticipate adding the easements, if not the next meeting, possibly the meeting after that. So there's four of them.
And the schedule is still to begin by the end of November and to finish by April 1st, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, which works with their time frame. It's fantastic. Okay. Any questions, comments?
Mr. Peterson. Are they local office, or are they really coming all the way from Freeport?
They may set up construction trailer.
Holy cow.
Other questions? Roll call, please.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Cope.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Tarulis.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very nice.
2.
Second by Peterson, and this just goes with what we just voted on. Discussion? Roll call, please.
Merrick?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Cope?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very nice.
Sanitary sewer lining bid award. A motion to accept bid and award contract award construction appropriated in an amount not to exceed $85,420.00.
Second by Solon. Roll call. Oh, sorry. Discussion. This will take about a month and a half to finish, correct? Should be done this year. And it's expected to extend the life by up to 100 years. 99, I think. So, roll call, please.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very nice. Anything else? You did awesome.
Thank you.
Not too bad yourself. I was thinking I'd get a haircut. I had a little bed head this morning. So. Economic Development Committee report.
No report.
Public Safety Committee.
Report.
Admin Committee. Park Board. Tim, I know you have a couple things you want to talk about.
Just three quick things. One, thank you to everyone that attended last weekend, so this past weekend's Halloween Egg Hunt and the Chamber Visitor event. So it was great weather, great turnout everywhere, so thank you for attending. Halloween Trick or Treating is next Monday. The city's hours are from 4 to 7. And then lastly, the Flags of Valor, Veterans Day event that we have at the Flags Week hanging in Town Square. Flags will be starting going up this week, and they'll be up through Veterans Day weekend.
Very nice. Any questions for Tim? And Tim and I are already discussing festivals for next year. Maybe one for Diwali, the new one. So, okay. Planning and Zoning Commission, anything?
No.
City Council report? Okay. City Clerk report?
No report.
Community and Liaison reports? Staff reports?
No further reports.
Mayor's report continued. I thought I had something, but I already mentioned I really need a haircut, and I apologize about that. So, and I didn't dress to the nines this meeting, so I apologize about that too. Okay, we have city buildings updates. I'm looking for a motion to approve the change orders relating to 651 Prairie Point Drive in Yorkville, which is the seventh set of change orders.
So moved.
Tarulis, Funkhauser. Bart, you want to just hit these briefly?
Yeah, one of them is an anticipated issue with the plumbing clean out near where we're putting the actual generator. The other one is a conduit for a future microwave connection system to Pencom, which is currently being served by a Comcast T1 or cable line, and the installation of which we've already authorized, at least the antenna part of it, will have a return on investment between 24 and 40 months for equipment that lasts between 7 to 10 years. So that's about $1,000 a month savings in the internet service that we won't need for potentially better, faster, more reliable internet.
Questions on that? Roll call, please.
Coke?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you all. Bart, water study update. You have a brief one, I think?
Yes. We did have our first pre-hearing with IDNR on Friday for our Lake Michigan allocation permit. The result of that pre-hearing was a fair amount of staff comments and will result in us sending resubmittals, basically, to their permitting division. The next pre-hearing that we will do with them won't be until beginning of April, so we're actually the third out of the three communities to be slotted into this hearing schedule. So our anticipated decision on Lake Michigan isn't expected until probably May, June, or July, depending on their hearing schedule. Nothing out of the ordinary, a lot of things to think about, some things to just catch. One thing, though, that will need to be discussed come budget time is IDNR is requesting us to basically get under 10% water loss by an earlier date than we expected. And they are asking for some concrete projects, you know, in the next few years to do that, which may result in us having to actually increase our water main replacement or other capital improvement projects over the next couple of years. So we are analyzing that at the staff level, and I anticipate that come January, February, we'll probably have a little bit more robust of a capital plan to approve within the water system in order to reduce that water loss from about 14% down to under 10% in order to get that Lake Michigan allocation permit. And then secondly, we had a manager's meeting with the DuPage Water Commission yesterday and today. And the escrow agreements for ongoing engineering, capital funding, seeding, and some governance agreements are all going to be coming in front of you here in Q1 and Q2 in 2023. So we may or may not have hard recommendations for funding within our water fund for these DWC type items by the time we release the budget in January or February, but we would know soon thereafter kind of what those numbers are going to be ballpark. And so, you know, at some point or another here in the next probably 6 to 7 months, we'll have to approve agreements covering all that in the page so that we can then start the RFP process for construction and start construction here in, you know, a year or two. So things are rapidly coming to a head.
Questions, comments? Thank you for the update. Do we have any additional business? Citizen comments and items not on the agenda. Please step forward and state your name. I'm sorry? Yeah, no, you're fine. Just whatever, go ahead.
My name is Barb Petrie. I'm from Plano. And thank you, Mr. Mayor, for this opportunity to speak.
You're always welcome. Thank you.
It's really cool to get to know some of the dynamics of the people here. tried to raise our kids for excellence, so I appreciate your pride in this man's, you know, financial report, and appreciate your desire to give care to children who need a home. And I'm a son of a Marine, so I appreciate the veteran. And so it's just cool to be here. And I appreciate that you thought last week was interesting. That was my first time here, and you labeled it as a religion 101 class or something. And I would like to just share a quote with you in response to that before I get to the comments that I really have on my heart. But this is from a Supreme Court justice from 1844. And I'll preface it by saying, you know, we all just sort of pledge allegiance with our hand over our heart to one nation under God. And this is what one of our early Supreme Court justices said in 1844. Christianity is not to be maliciously and openly reviled and blasphemed against to the annoyance of believers or the injury of the public. This is a Christian country. And another justice in 1882 said, our laws and institutions must necessarily be based upon and embody the teachings of the Redeemer of mankind. And I hope you all hear that. That's it. The judge went on to say, our civilization and our institutions are emphatically Christian. This is a religious people, an official and unofficial declaration from the masses ever since the discovery of this continent until this present 1892, have all made a single voice with the same utterance, this is a Christian nation. So I just want to lay that out for your consideration as you make your decisions for this city. Now, this is in response to some of the discussion that was going on last time I was here. There is a saying that if you can get people to believe absurdities, then you can get them to do atrocities. And just for clarity, an absurdity is something utterly or obviously senseless, illogical, or untrue, contrary to all reason. An atrocity is something extremely or shockingly wicked, bad, and tasteless. So again, if you can get people to believe absurdities, then you can get them to do atrocities, which is what I hope you guys will avoid. But it was made known at the meeting last week that advertisements for drag queen shows include clothing which reveals private or sexual body parts, bleeding nipples, chains around necks, blood flowing from lips, individuals posing in sexually provocative positions, lewd descriptions of private body parts, and written expressions of dark thoughts rooted in deep pain. This describes indecency, debauchery, and abuse, not activity that is normal, acceptable, or desirable. It is absurd to think that incorporating this type of community into our children's atmosphere is fine and okay. Near the close of the last city council meeting, a woman who identified herself as a Satanist implored those of us opposing drag queen activity in family-oriented settings. She implored us to stop burdening the council with our ongoing efforts to protect our children's wholesomeness and innocence. In direct contrast to Satan's approach, the Most High God tells his followers to speak up for those who cannot speak up for themselves. And children cannot speak up for themselves, so we will. There is a book that has been worldwide, agelessly known as a good guide for governance, for wisdom of life, and supernatural authority. And this book says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who change darkness into light and light into darkness, who change bitter into sweet and sweet into bitter. Again, I'm just hoping that the city council for the city of Yorkville chooses not to go that route. But at the last city council meeting, this body of public servants did not lift a finger, to my observation, to look at the information which a concerned citizen carefully had gathered for your conscientious consideration. This looked to me, I don't know what to make of it. It seemed like a firm display of allegiance, possible allegiance. I don't know what else to say. Nobody would look at it. Does this indicate, this is a, you know, a rhetorical question, does it indicate an allegiance to what the God of the Bible calls sexual immorality? Again, I remind you, we say the pledge. Guys, say the pledge at every meeting. One nation under God. And God says that it's better for someone to have a boulder tied around their neck and be drowned in the sea than to mislead little children. So, I'm earnestly requesting that the Yorkville City Council take all necessary measures to protect our children from drag queen presence in their daily life. It is absurd to think that aligning with anything that Satan promotes can result in anything good for this city. Peace and prosperity for Yorkville will only be maintained if the city leadership adheres to what the Most High God says is good and right, as presented in his book, the Bible. He will bless those who follow his ways. And so I just hope that you make your decisions accordingly. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else want to speak? Nobody else want to speak? Is there a motion to adjourn? Oh, I'm sorry. Step forward. State your name, if you would like.
Hi, my name is Jenny Lund, and I am a 35-year resident of Yorkville. I have no intention of speaking tonight, but I first would like to thank you, Mr. Mayor, and all of your council people who make the rules and follow through on them all the time here in Yorkville. After hearing that presentation, I'm a little surprised. I work with children daily. I don't feel that the things I just heard stated have an effect. I'm trying to process all of that, but I don't feel that that drag queen incident that took place here in Yorkville, that happened in an establishment for people over the age of 21. And I know as a parent and someone who works with children, I would not be bringing my child to an establishment that was for over the age of 21. So I value what you said clearly about God, but I don't think that has an issue here in this political forum. Again, I just want to stand up and thank you for what you do. We all have choices, and especially with our children. If you don't agree with it, don't do it. But certainly, I'm not really sure. I have to process more on what I just heard. So thank you, and keep doing the job that you're doing for us.
Thank you for your time. Anyone else want to speak?
Hi, my name is Molly Kremsky. It's good to be back. 2 weeks ago, I presented a packet that outlined the social media pages of the adult entertainers that worked the June 2022 South Bank Original Barbecue Show. Since then, I was able to do some research on the social media pages of the men who were invited to put on the show for the Yorkville residents at Tins Entertainment Center in August of 2022. These are two different groups of entertainers, but their social media presences were very similar. I will invite you to follow along with me in the packet that you have on your desk. I will attempt to describe the images for those of you who refuse to look at them. However, I will point out that it doesn't play very well with voters when elected officials refuse to acknowledge concerns from citizens. I released videos of the images from the Pins and South Bank Entertainers social media pages on several Yorkville community pages in an attempt to keep citizens informed about the choices being made by this administration. All of you have the packet on your desk. I also gave Peterson a copy of the packet distributed 2 weeks ago. I used the August 2022 advertisement from Pins to find the exact names of the three people who performed on August 21st. This packet contains commentary from their social media, their specific social media accounts. This information will substantiate the fact that male-female impersonation is highly sexual in nature and is properly classified as adult entertainment in our statutes. We're seeing evidence of this truth across the country right now, especially in Illinois, as we experiment with bringing adult entertainment into the middle of our suburban towns. So on the second page of the packet, the first account belongs to the Holt, Angel LaBere. This is him in a plaid schoolgirl outfit with black high heels swinging around a stripper pole. The next picture is him in strappy lingerie with some kind of fishnet, thigh-high boots, a choker, and elbow-length black gloves. The last one is him looking like an underdressed showgirl in black leather thigh-high boots. The next page is him in a sheer top, no pants, and all of his corseted, half-dressed friends. The bottom of that page are pictures of him in a black corset and underwear with sheer nylon over his exposed breasts. On the next page, you'll see Elena Couture. These are his completely bare breasts with fairy emojis strategically placed over his nipples. The commentary reads as follows. Free the nipple, hashtag tits, hashtag big ass, hashtag OnlyFans, hashtag big titty club, among other things. On the next page is a picture of him in a completely sheer unitard with full length yellow leather boots that are clipped to his crotch. The next two pictures is a set of him dressed up in a leopard print leotard, leopard print corset, and leopard print thigh-high boots. There are holes cut in the front of his leotard so that his breasts can hang out in their entirety. He also has on leopard print gloves with 3-inch claws. His wig is links of chain. In one photo, he's doing the splits, and in the other, his crotch is spread open for the camera. The commentary is as follows. Look, I need a hard hitter. I need a deep stroker. I need a henny drinker. I need a weed smoker. I want you to touch that little dangly dang, that swang in the back of my throat. The next performer is Fox E. Kim. This is a picture of him topless in a corset and pumps, grabbing his man breasts with fingers outfitted with 3-inch claws. He's also wearing a collar and a sheer bondage-style mask that covers all of his face but his eyes. There are a few of him dressed as a woman, posing in a creepy way with a small guy holding a paddle. The commentary reads, hashtag frat night. I think this is our last page. Bra, corset, and underwear, posing with the guy in banana shorts. A picture of him licking a banana, him wearing underwear and a green shirt with breasts and nipples drawn on it, and finally him in a black leather strapless leotard with clawed gloves and a bondage-style muzzle and collar. I'm not showing you these images to personally attack these men or suggest that their freedom of expression should be infringed upon. The pictures I'm showing you, the pictures I showed you last week and the ones I 2 weeks ago and the ones that I'm showing you now, are simply evidence for why male-female impersonation is classified and needs to remain classified as adult entertainment in our statutes. It is not harmless fun. It is a sexually provocative style of entertainment. We need to have a conversation about the impact that the decision to allow adult entertainers to perform in standard business zones will have on the future of Yorkville. Who's responsible for regulating this now called 21 plus entertainment? that's currently being allowed to occur outside of proper zoning and licensing restrictions established by our state and local ordinances. Are these entertainers vetted? Is anyone running background checks? Do they carry insurance, or is the host facility responsible for that? Will insurance companies pay out for incidents that occur in conjunction with shows that are improperly zoned? Are precautions being taken by the city or business owners to mitigate the secondary effects on the community? Are you motivated to protect property values or the safety of the community? These are all questions that need to be openly discussed in the proper setting. Even Mayor Purcell's friend Sarah, who was invited over from Millington 2 weeks ago, agrees that a conversation about ordinances involving lewdness is necessary. As of now, Shaw local reporter Mark Foster is the only one who has monitored or given us any feedback on these performances. Is this going to be our long-term strategy for monitoring adult entertainers while on stage in Yorkville? Their social media feeds have shown us that precautions need to be taken. If you are going to decide to break the law, maybe you should at least try to do it safely. If you are not going to follow our ordinances, which are meant to serve as our documented and publicized objective standard of morality, we need to discuss what we're going to use as our new standard. Are we going to allow people to dance for us in anything that someone wore to Raging Waves? Is it okay for Yorkville families if you saw it on the Late Show? Maybe we'll just decide if it's appropriate, if it's commonplace in internet form. When you throw out the objective standard, where do you draw the line? Is our new standard for morality anything they push through our TV screens? Well, Hollywood has launched a campaign to mainstream MAPS, or minor attracted persons. Sane people refer to them as pedophiles. If love is love, why not? And of course, the three-year-old would have to give consent first, obviously. If they make two or three blockbusters about the beautiful relationship between a six-year-old and his 62-year-old neighbor, will that be okay for Yorkville? Because they're making those movies now. When you have no regard for the published law, chaos reigns. When you have no standard for moral truth, anything goes. Why should any business or citizen honor the law if lawmakers won't even do so? And just to give you guys fair warning, I have absolutely no plans on any Tuesday night between now and the April 2023 local elections. Thank you again for letting me speak.
Thank you. Anyone else? Michael, welcome back.
Thank you. Mike Kremsky. I would like to get back on track after the last meeting. We are here because of ordinance violations and want to discuss a viable strategy going forward. Why is the city so worried about communicating with the citizens, upholding current ordinances, and discussing solutions? We were met with name-calling and noise surrounding this issue from the very first time Mayor Purcell ever communicated with us. Why? At the last meeting, an inaccurate definition of separation of church and state was invoked as a counter-argument to uphold the current ordinances. Our personal beliefs don't change the ordinance currently in place, and we will express our religious views freely, even more so when they are attacked. The Founding Fathers and political influencers of the United States of America, in their own words, clearly articulate who influenced their ideas. America has an undeniable biblical foundation. The cornerstone of this great nation is Jesus Christ. The concept of separation of church and state simply keeps the government from establishing a state-run church. It does nothing to limit the religious freedoms protected by the First Amendment. I can understand why Satan wants to subvert this truth. The Founding Fathers understood that separation from their Savior would directly impact their rights. They believe all people have God-given rights, not subject to earthly government. They knew God's blessing would not remain on this nation if we turn from our Creator. Noah Webster said this: "No truth is more evident than that the Christian religion must be the basis of any government intended to secure the rights and privileges of a free people. The Christian religion is the basis, or rather the source, of all genuine freedom in government. Jedediah Moore said this, "To the kindly influence of Christianity, we owe that degree of civil freedom and political and social happiness which mankind knows and enjoys. All efforts made to destroy the foundation of our holy religion ultimately tend to the subversion also of our political freedom and happiness. As the genuine effects of Christianity are diminished in any nation, in the same proportion will the people of that nation receive from the blessings of genuine freedom." What will it take for us to back off this fight? As Christians, we take God's blessing as American citizens seriously. We understand that the unrighteous will destroy cities, states, countries. History proves that. We really just want you to honor the ordinances, all the ordinances. Until you do, we will not waste this wonderful opportunity that your obstinance to upholding law has given us to publicly proclaim Christ's kingdom and set yourself on the path towards the Creator.
Thank you. Anyone else? Is there a motion to adjourn? Oh, I didn't see you there. Sorry.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Keith Brennan. I'm from Plano. Interesting. I attend all of our city council meetings. I've never been in one of yours, and this is an interesting show you got going on here, Mayor. Okay, so where do we begin? I'm just kind of catching up with this whole drag queen thing. And so I actually followed first speaker tonight, last night at our meeting. Everybody has a right to what they want to do, you know, live their lives the way they want to live. But when you start putting things like that upon children, there's an issue. And anybody that condones that kind of behavior, you know, you've got some moral issues. I'm learning there's ordinances in Yorkville that should be preventing this that aren't being enforced. There's a big problem there because you all here are tasked with that responsibility to see to it that your ordinances are enforced. And if you're not doing that, you all are tyrants. You all need to be removed from those chairs you're sitting in. That's where I come from. It's my specialty. You all know what happened in Plano a couple of years ago. We got rid of our tyrants. You know, I'm thinking maybe you guys need to get some more chairs, because I'm thinking these meetings are going to start filling up with a whole lot of people. Again, I'm not against what drag queens want to do. They want to do that. Free to do that. We're free Americans. We all have rights, our freedom. But when you're not enforcing your own ordinances and you're allowing this kind of, and I mean, you guys, I was noticing that, you know, she passed out some pamphlets or whatever for you guys to look at. I was noticing like almost none of you guys were looking at it. That speaks volumes. It says to me that you really don't care. You, Mayor, you mocked the religious aspect of it all. That in itself is simply appalling. I mean, whether you believe or don't believe, I could care less, but to mock a citizen that comes in here, you should be ashamed of yourself. Literally, and you should apologize. I'm sure you won't. So, basically, you know, there are avenues that can be taken when bodies fail to do their jobs in enforcing your ordinances. If these ordinances, as I'm to understand, are in place and they are not being enforced, then those avenues will begin to get pursued. And once that happens again, elections come, elections go. You know Bob Hauser, remember him? He was a tyrant. He's gone. He's gone because he got exposed. What happens is when people like us get together and form our groups, we expose what you do. We expose your tyranny. And once the masses of people realize, because most people don't look, most people aren't looking, most people don't care. But once people start looking, and they start to see things like, in the beginning of this meeting here, you have your, you know, like we just, Plano just did their budget analysis and audits and stuff. And yeah, same thing, you know, 5 stars, full ratings, you guys are awesome, we have all this extra money. You joked about adding 75 employees. I'm telling the people of Yorkville, if I were you, I would be looking for you to start looking for some tax reform here. You know, possibly lowering, eliminating your municipal taxes. Looking at the county level to lower and, your property taxes, because clearly you're paying them way too much money. The government needs enough money to function. The government does not need surpluses of money. That is fact. So that being said, you know, everything comes into light. So my suggestion, I don't know if any of you have heard, I know that Ethan has, he's heard Watchdogs in Plano. We take care of these problems. So I would highly suggest that this city council, the ones of you who have the blank looks on your faces, or the ones that you are looking at me like, who's this idiot? Take a good look. Okay? Good look. Enjoy your chairs while you have them. Because as soon as all this gets exposed to the masses of people, when your elections come up, you potentially won't be reelected. You lose your chairs. They're comfy looking chairs too. By the way, much nicer chairs than plane pilots. I will say that. Right? You said it. Anyway, yeah, I'm just kind of joking around. But seriously, this drag queen thing is wrong. It's morally wrong in every way to put it in front of children. Again, I don't care what they do. But allowing it by not enforcing your ordinances to be in front of children is absolutely wrong. And I highly suggest that you guys do something about that. I see a lot of people here tonight very concerned about that issue. I've heard of the other nights that people were here. And, you know, I was asked to come tonight and observe. I kind of call it recon.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Is there a motion to adjourn? Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Merrick. Roll call, please.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Tarulis.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Solling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Cope.
Yeah.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Transier.
Yeah.
And Merrick, right?
Yep. You always try to look when I only have it partially because I have it on my chest.